106.6.
That was Nick Kershaw with Wouldn't It Be Good, and you're listening to 106.6 live from North Manchester, and this is the DVD Fever show with Dom Robinson. That's me, and this is a new weekly show where I look through the week's releases in movies and video games, plus the charts, and look at what's new on TV, and news for all three. DVDfever.co.uk is a non-profit website and has recently had a revamp, so please take a look at that. If you've got anything to say about anything you hear on the show, do get in touch via the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDfevershow and you'll see everything on there. What we've got coming up in the first hour, where we talk about movies, we're going to have a... excuse me, I'm coughing already. A review on DVD and Blu-ray, which is out this week, for The Roundup. Actually, it might come out last week. There we go. I've got the top 10 movie charts with two films tying at number one for the first time that I know of. So also look at the new cinema releases, including Super 8 and Mr. Popper's Penguins. Some new DVD releases, including Limitless, Super and Submarine. And also some film news. So we're going to start off with a review of The Roundup. Now, The Roundup is set in France in July 1942, during the Second World War, when the Nazis forced their occupation and, on Hitler's order, rounded up all the Jews to take them into internment camps, with death as their only eventual fate. Something that none of them knew at the time, nor did the doctors and nurses who were there to look after them should they get ill. The film mostly follows the Weizmann and Ziegler families living in Montmartre, who are amongst a planned 24,000 Jews, all singled out by having a yellow star sewn onto the chest of their clothes, who are rounded up with the intention of being sent to those camps, potentially, in their minds, with a view for the men being sent off to arms factories and salt mines in Poland. Prior to this, they used to have as content a life as one can do when the country has been occupied by the Nazis, but there was always the threat of being taken away. The first stop being the Winter Velodrome for 2 days, which is where we first see Dr. David Scheinbaum, Jean Reno, as a doctor treating the sick there. And the Nazis did not discriminate. It wasn't just families in general that were taken, but people from old folks' homes and asylums, as well as hospitals with patients who'd only just been operated on. After that, they were transferred to the Bonne-Laurent camp. Along the way, many of the Jews tried various ways to evade capture, and it turned out that while over 13,000 of them were captured, there were still 10,000 that weren't caught due to being hidden away by brave Parisians. The acting is okay, but it never really feels like anyone really pushes the boat out, relying on just the emphatic music to create the atmosphere. This is especially true of Jean Reno, and not just because he doesn't turn up until 46 minutes into the film. Melanie Laurent is there as nurse Annette Bonneau, and is tasked with seeing to those who are ill, but it turns out to be a fairly one-dimensional role. And there is a bond struck up between Reno and Laurent, but it doesn't really have time to be fully developed in the film's duration. In fact, as sad as the premise of the film is, it spends all of its time just going from A to B to C and so on, and failing to really draw you into the proceedings. There's more emotion shown by the firemen who turn up at the velodrome, supposedly just to check the fire hoses, but who are ready to give out water to everyone, with many of the detainees passing letters to them to post out to friends and relatives on the outside. Overall, while it does have a number of heartfelt moments in the second half, it does find a fair proportion of its first hour going rather too slowly. Presented in its original theatrical ratio and in 1080p high definition on Blu-ray, the picture looks crisp and clear throughout with no problems whatsoever, bringing the grim misery of the predicament to the screen. Audio-wise, the film is presented in DTS 5.1 Master Audio, but while it's a drama and not intended as a demo disc, the sound is well used when the firemen turn up in the velodrome, ready to give water out to everybody. There's only one extra on this disc, and that's a making-of, running for about 27 minutes, featuring a chat from key cast and crew members, including Jean Reno, Melanie Laurent, the director, Rose Bosch, and also comments from one of the real survivors, the name of which I obviously can't reveal, as that's what you find out when you watch the film. Also, I came across a bit of a defect early on in the disc during the opening credits, which was a bit bizarre. It sort of never happened again, so it could have just been a one-off problem with my disc. The film then, I say, it gets better as it goes on, but the first half really drags. So, the film, I'll give it a 6 out of 10 overall. Picture's certainly worth a 10, though. Sounds a reasonable 8. A mere 1 out of 10 for the extras, because there's hardly anything on it. And 6 out of 10 overall. So if you're not sure whether to watch it, maybe, you know, go and have a rental. It's certainly, you know, maybe worth a watch. But yeah, it's not really a film that's for everyone. Even though it has got Jean Reno in it, who's usually absolutely fantastic in most things. Okay, so that's a review of the roundup for you. In a minute, we'll be having a look at the movie charts for this week. But first of all, we're going to have a bit of music, and we're going to have Robert Plant with Angel Dance. This is 106.6.
106.6.
That was Robert Plant with Angel Dance, and you're back with the DVD Fever Show with Don Robinson on 106.6, live from North Manchester. Now, in this section, we're going to be having a look at the movie charts. Now, again, I'm just going to say that I go through the US movie charts here, because I've mentioned several times before that the UK ones just don't seem to be available anymore. Just, I really don't know what's happened to them, but seem to have dropped off the face of the earth. But anyway, it's sort of a reflection of pretty much what's going to be coming out sort of sooner or later within the UK. Now, as mentioned before, there are two. For the first time that I know of, there are two films going straight in at number one, because they're both taking exactly the same amount of money. So the first of these two is Cowboys and Aliens. I mean, the amount they've taken between them is fairly low for a sort of number one hit, $36.2 million. Anyway, about this one, The Old West, where a lone cowboy leads an uprising against a terror from beyond our world. 1873, Arizona Territory. A stranger with no memory of his past stumbles into the hard desert town of Absolution. The only hint to his history is a mysterious shackle that encircles one wrist. What he discovers is that the people of Absolution don't welcome strangers, and nobody makes a move on the streets unless ordered to by the iron-fisted Colonel Dollarhide. It's a town that lives in fear, but Absolution is about to experience fear it can scarcely comprehend, as a desolate city is attacked by marauders from the sky. Screaming down with breathtaking velocity and blinding lights to abduct the helpless one by one, these monsters challenge everything the residents have ever known. Now the stranger they have rejected is their only hope for salvation. As this gunslinger starts to slowly remember who he is and where he's been, he realizes he holds a secret that could give the town a fighting chance against the alien force. With the help of the elusive traveller Ella, Olivia Wilde, he pulls together a posse comprised of former opponents' townsfolk, Dollarhide and his boys, outlaws and Apache warriors, all in danger of annihilation. United against a common enemy, they will prepare for an epic showdown for survival. The film features a cast of including Daniel Craig, Clancy Brown, Sam Rockwell and Keith Carradine. And also the aforementioned Olivia Wilde, who I last saw in, I think the only thing I've seen her in, was in the pretty appalling Tron Legacy at the start of the year. This is the confession time, because these two films, I actually forgot to watch the trailer. But I saw a brief bit of it on TV. I mean, I put the trailer on the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. And the bit that I saw on the trailer on TV, it looks okay, a bit over the top. But it's a summer blockbuster, isn't it? So the other film that's out, and what's gone straight to number one, is The Smurfs. When the evil wizard Gargamel chases the tiny blue Smurfs out of their village, they tumble from their magical world and into ours. In fact, smack dab in the middle of Central Park. They take shelter with a young married couple, Patrick and Grace Winslow, who are expecting a baby. Now the Smurfs must get back to the Middle Ages and stop Gargamel. Just three apples high and stuck in the Big Apple, the Smurfs must find a way to get back to their village before Gargamel tracks them down. The film stars Hank Azaria as Gargamel and Neil Patrick Harris and Jemma Mays as Patrick and Grace Winslow. I say, this is the other trailer I forgot to watch, but I think it's another one of these CGI films, so I'll have a look at it before. So it's on the Facebook page as well. I'll have a look at it before next week, but I think it's going to be another one of these CGI films, so it's not really going to be my bag. Number three, got Captain America, the First Avenger. This one, it's got a big cast with Chris Evans as Steve Rogers, a.k.a. Captain America, plus Hayley Atwell, Tommy Lee Jones, Hugo Weaving and Dominic Cooper. Watching the trailer, it looks a bit of a laugh, but I'm not particularly into superhero movies. They seem to be coming out at quite a fast rate these days, so it won't be top of my list. Number four, we've got Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. Number five, got Crazy Stupid Love, which is that's taken $19.3 million in its first week. And in that one, Cal, Steve Carell, and Emily, Julianne Moore, have the perfect life together, living the American dream, until Emily asks for a divorce. Now Cal, Mr. Husband, has to navigate the single scene with a little help from his professional bachelor friend, Jacob Palmer, Ryan Gosling. Well, not so much a little help, but make that a lot of help. Also starring Marissa Tomei and Emma Stone, who's also in Friends with Benefits, it's coming up in a minute. Watching the trailer, I got a couple of laughs out of it, but there's nothing here that really made me want to sit through the entire movie. I'm not really a big fan of Steve Carell anyway. I never really got the American version of The Office. Number six, got Friends with Benefits. That one, Dylan, Justin Timberlake, and Jamie, Myla Kunis. I think it's going to be easy to add the simple act of sex to their friendship, despite what Hollywood romantic comedies would have them believe. They soon discover, however, that getting physical really does always lead to complications. Also starring Woody Harrelson, Patricia Clarkson, Richard Jenkins from Six Feet Under, and Emma Stone. I've now seen the trailer for this, and I think I've put it on the Facebook page. It really does look as bad as it seems, so I wouldn't recommend that one. Then we've got Horrible Bosses. In that one, Nick hates his boss, mostly because he's expected to work from before sunrise to after sunset, and his boss, Mr. Harkin, calls him out for being a minute late and blackmails him so he can't quit. Dale hates his boss, Dr. Julia Harris, because she makes unwelcome sexual advances when he's about to get married. But Dale is on that pesky list of child offenders, so he can't quit. Kurt actually likes his boss and his job and his boss. Well, up until his boss dies and the boss's coked-out psychopathic son takes over. But who would be crazy enough to quit their jobs in such poor economic times? Instead, Nick, Dale and Kurt drunkenly and hypothetically discuss how to kill their bosses, and before they know it, they've hired a murder consultant to help them pull off their deeds. With Jason Bateman, Kevin Spacey, Charlie Day, Jennifer Aniston and Jason Sudeikis. Watching the trailer, this does look like a really good laugh, so comes recommended from me. Number eight, we've got Transformers Dark of the Moon. Number nine, Zookeeper. I think that one only went in straight in last week. So that's not really doing too well, but it doesn't look very good anyway. Number 10, Cars 2. And with there being a joint number one this week, the top 10 goes up to 11, with Winnie the Pooh hanging in there. Okay, now before we have a look at the cinema releases, just have a brief bit of music from Gorillaz and Don't Get Lost in Heaven. This is 106.6.
106.6.
That was Gorillaz and Don't Get Lost in Heaven, and you're back on 106.6 live from North Manchester, and you're back with the DVD Fever Show with Dom Robinson. And now we're going to have a look at the cinema releases out this week. There's five of them, and first one of all, we've got Super 8. In the summer of 1979, a group of friends in a small Ohio town witness a catastrophic train crash while making a Super 8 movie, and soon suspect that it was not an accident. Shortly after, unusual disappearances and inexplicable events begin to take place in town, and the local deputy tries to uncover the truth, something more terrifying than any of them could ever have imagined. Written and directed by J.J. Abrams, who's been involved in the new Star Trek films, there's no one famous in it, but the trailer shows that it's a very expensive special effects movie and looks like the archetypal summer blockbuster, and one that looks like it's certainly worth a watch. Also out this Friday, we've got Mr. Popper's Penguins. This is a live-action family comedy film and distributed by 20th Century Fox, starring Jim Carrey, and based on the children's book of the same name. Mr. Tom Popper, Jim Carrey, is a divorced realtor whose father travelled to many far places around the world during his childhood. When his father dies, a crate containing a penguin shows up at his doorstep. Eventually more penguins arrive, bringing the total to six. Originally intending to donate the penguins to the local zoo, Popper's children fall in love with them, so he decides to keep them. At the same time, Popper is given the task of buying Tavern on the Green, an old restaurant that he used to eat at with his father as a child. with the intent of tearing it down and building a new development in its place. However, its elderly owner, Angela Lansbury, will only sell it to someone who she deems a person of true value. Now, this one stars Jim Carrey, Carla Gugino, Angela Lansbury, Ophelia Lovibond, and Jeffrey Tambor. And watching the trailer, it's definitely something to which I'll be giving a miss. But if you've got kids, they'll probably love it. Then we've got Sarah's Key. 10-year-old Sarah Starzynski denies to the authorities carrying out the roundup, as this is to tying in basically with the film I was reviewing earlier, the roundup. So she denies to the authorities carrying out the roundup at the Winter Velodrome, that her little brother Michel is at home, and she locks him in a closet to protect him. She tells him to stay there and wait until she returns. She takes the key with her when she and her parents are transported to the Winter Velodrome. When a woman plans on escaping from there by sneaking past the guards, Sarah wants to give her the key so she can rescue Michel, but her father does not think that she will succeed and is therefore against it. To his surprise, she succeeds and regrets that he has not given the key to the woman. Judging that his son's fate is in the closet is even worse than being deported, he reports to a guard that the boy is still at home, but no action is taken. They are transferred to the Bon-le-Roland camp. The men are deported to the death camp in Auschwitz, and the women later too, and the children have to stay. Sarah tries to escape with a friend, Rachel, after noticing a small hole in the ground underneath the fence. A guard stops them, whom Sarah recognises from before the war. She remembers he always had been friendly to her in the past, and begs him to let her go. She has to save her brother. After making sure that no one can see, he agrees, lifting a hole in the fence to let them out. Now that's just part of the plot. Is to give away any more would reveal the whole film. But the end itself is reflected of one of the characters in the roundup, and if you're going to watch either film, then you'll want to find out for yourself. The film stars Christian Scott Thomas, Neil Zarestrup, and Aidan Quinn. And the trailer doesn't give too much away, but so it may be worth seeing a different side to things from the roundup, but let's just hope it manages to engage more with the viewer. Two more films. We've got one called The Tree. Now, after the sudden death of her father, 8-year-old Simone shares a secret with her mother, Dawn. She's convinced her father speaks to her through the leaves of her favourite tree, and he's come back to protect them. But the new bond between mother and daughter is threatened when Dawn starts a relationship with George, the plumber, called in to remove the tree's troublesome roots. As the branches of the tree start to infiltrate the house, the family is forced to make an agonising decision. But have they left it too late? Starring Charlotte Gainsbourg, Morgana Davis and Martin Sokas, I watched the trailer and, to be quite frank, I failed to care whether the tree survived or not. It didn't grab me one jot and I don't recommend it. And the last film we've got for you, it's called The Referees. Again, all the trailers for these are on the Facebook page. In The Referees, how can a few crucial minutes in a football match change the life of an entire family? How do the quote-unquote men in black feel when they are attacked by supporters? The Referees, also known as Kill the Referee, unveils the lives of several professional football referees at the Euro 2008 Championship, amongst them the English referee Howard Webb, who provoked incredible controversy when he gave a penalty to Austria just before the end of the match with Poland, and the Italian Roberto Rossetti, who refereed the final. Now, I have to say that I hate football. Everyone who knows me knows that. I just find it incredibly boring, so I'm not likely to vote a preference for this one. I'm watching the trailer, that just hasn't changed my mind at all. That's all your films that are out for this week. Now, in a minute, we'll be having a look at the DVDs out this week. First of all, we're going to have a bit of music for you, and we've got Eiffel 65 and Blue. This is 106.6.
106.6.
That was Eiffel 65 with Blue, and you're listening to 106.6 live from North Manchester, and this is the DVD Fever Show with Dom Robinson. That's me. Now, in this segment, we're going to be having a look at the DVDs that are out this week, starting with Limitless. Again, the trailers for all of these are on the Facebook page. Now, this is an action thriller about a writer who takes an experimental drug that allows him to use 100% of his mind. As one man evolves into the perfect vision of himself, forces more corrupt than he can imagine mark him for assassination. an out-of-work writer, Eddie Morris, Bradley Cooper's, rejection by girlfriend Lindy, Abby Cornish, confirms his belief that he has zero future. That all vanishes the day an old friend introduces Eddie to NZT, a designer pharmaceutical that makes him laser-focused and more confident than any man alive. Now on an NZT-fueled odyssey, everything Eddie's read, heard or seen is instantly organised and available to him. As a former nobody rises to the top of the financial world, he draws the attention of business mogul Carl Van Loon, Robert De Niro, who sees this enhanced version of Eddie as a tool to make billions. But brutal side effects jeopardise his meteoric ascent. With a dwindling stash and hitmen who will eliminate him to get the NZT... Oh, that's it. With a dwindling stash and hitmen who eliminate him to get the NZT. Now, I've been curious to see this film, and the trailer makes it look like it doesn't disappoint. I did think it was going to have sort of more special effects and, you know, basically than it seems to have. But anyway, it certainly does look one that's well worth a watch. Also out on DVD this week, and not to be confused with Super 8, we've got Super, which is the ultimate response to the cry for a realistic comic book movie. It says here, the film follows humdrum everyman Frank Darbo, played by Rainn Wilson of The Office, as he takes up the mantle of superhero the Crimson Bolt in order to win his wife back from the more interesting drug dealing man she left him for. Along the way, Frank unwittingly agrees to help the help of teenage Libby, played by the incredible Ellen Page, in order to battle crime and bring down the drug dealer's empire. The film can be seen as a reply to the 2010 Marvel that was Kick-Ass, and that may be Super's greatest letdown with fans of the genre. People may not want to see the film because of its similarities to the adaptation of Mark Miller's critically rated comic, but those who feel this way, it says please see this film before passing judgment. Now, based on what I'd read about this film, I was ready to instantly dismiss it but I've seen the trailer and it really won me over, which is quite surprising, so... I think a viewing of this is a must. Ellen Page is generally always worth a watch, but that said, I saw Juno, which was repeated again on TV on Sunday night, and almost fell into a coma. It was that dull. But the other film she's been in is good. They're all good, especially Inception. That is a must-see. The next DVD out is Submarine. Hailed as a triumphantly brilliant movie from Dazed and Confused, and the best British comedy in years from Shortlist, Submarine is a hilarious coming-of-age story from director Richard Ayoade from the IT Crowd. And it stars Craig Roberts from Being Human, Yasmin Page, Sally Hawkins from Made in Dagenham, Noah Taylor from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and Paddy Considine from Hot Fuzz. One boy must fight to save his mother from the advances of a mystic, then simultaneously lure his pyromaniac girlfriend into the bedroom. Armed with only a wide vocabulary, and near-total self-belief. His name is Oliver Tate. Special features include an audio commentary with director Ayoade, plus author of the original novel Joe Dunthorne, and director of photography Eric Wilson. There's cast and crew Q&As, Alex Turner's Pile Driver Waltz music video, a featurette called Through the Prism with Graham T. Purvis, cast and crew interviews, a message from Ben Stiller, deleted and extended scenes, and a trailer. Now, I saw the trailer for this, and to be honest, it just looks weird as hell, but one that's also likely to draw you in, and it can be one that can be very different from conventional films about love. So based on that, I'd certainly recommend this. Next up, we have The Lavender Hill Mob. Now, this is a 60th anniversary edition that's out now on Blu-ray and DVD. Holland, Alec Guinness, is a shy retiring man who works as a bank transfer agent for the delivery of gold bullion. One day he befriends Pendlebury, Stanley Holloway, a maker of souvenirs. Holland remarks that with Pendlebury's smelting equipment, one could forge the gold into harmless-looking toy Eiffel Towers and smuggle the gold into France. Soon after, they gain the services of professional criminals Lackery, Sid James, and Shorty, Alfie Bass. And the four plot their crime, unaware of the pitfalls which lie ahead. An enduring classic from director Charles Crichton, The Lavender Hill Mob
features an early screen appearance from Audrey Hepburn and was included on the British Film Institute's list of the 100 best films, 100 best British films rather, of the 20th century. Special features include a behind-the-scenes stills gallery, an introduction from Martin Scorsese, an excerpt from Beck 2 interview with Charles Crichton, and a digitally restored trailer. Also out this week, I've got Doctor Who, The Sunmakers. And the TARDIS arrives in the future on the planet Pluto, where there are now six suns, a breathable atmosphere, and a large industrial community. The company controls the planet and exploits the workers, pays them a pittance, and then taxes them on everything imaginable. It's a bit like our government. The Doctor and Leela join forces with an underground band of rebels led by a man named Mandrell. Special features here include a commentary with cast and crew, documentaries and behind-the-scenes footage, photo gallery, and something, well, an interview with someone called T.E.B. Clark. Maybe he wrote it, I don't know. Other new movies out this week include Faster, starring Dwayne Johnson, a.k.a. The Rock, and Billy Bob Thornton. We've got Hobo with a Shotgun, with Rutger Hauer. Inhale, with Dermot Mulroney from My Best Friend's Wedding in Young Guns. And Diane Kruger from Unknown. There's also the original version of The Silent House out now. Some TV series out this week. We've got Camelot Season 1. We have New Tricks Series 7. Spiral Series 3. There's a complete series DVD box set of Star Trek Voyager. 2012 Series 1, which I mentioned last week, so I gave a review of the first episode of that. Now it's getting a repeat on BBC Two. And also Twilight Zone Season 3. And that's out as well. Okay, and in a minute we're going to be having some film news for you. This is 106.6.
106.6.
You're back on Manchester's 106.6, and this is the DVD Fever Show with Dom Robinson. And now we're going to be having some film news for you. Starting with, first bit is that Stephen Dorff and Nick Swardson talk about porn comedy Bucky Larson and being friends with Adam Sandler. In Bucky Larson, Born to Be a Star, frequent comedy scene stealer Swardson steps into the spotlight as a naive young man who decides to join the family business, porn. To pursue this dream, Bucky travels to Hollywood to break into the industry, where he encounters Stephen Dorff's reigning porn king, Dick Shadows. The idea came from none other than Adam Sandler, who then co-wrote the script with Swardson. "I was in Nashville, Tennessee, doing a show, and Sandler called me up," Swardson recalled. He goes, "I've got an idea for a movie. What about a guy just like a goofy dude, and then he finds out his parents used to be porn stars in the 70s, and he comes across their porno?" And I'm like, "Yeah, it's hilarious." And he says, yeah, but here's the thing. You know, this guy's never orgasmed before, and he's going to follow in his parents' footsteps in the porn world. But he's like the most innocent guy in the world. So he developed this dude and developed the comedy, and it turned out awesome. So how did Dorff get involved? Credit Sandler for that too. "I wanted to do a comedy, and I'm friends with Sandler, and Sandler really believes in Nick Swardson," said Dorff. "They wrote this together, and I read it, and I thought it was hysterical." As it turns out, Dorff and Sandler go way back. "He introduced Adam to his wife," Swardson exclaimed. "Adam and his wife Jackie met at my 25th birthday party," Dorff explained. "I'm now 37. I'm an old man. We go way back. And Adam's always been a great supporter of mine, and I've always wanted to do more comedy. I did one movie with John Waters years ago, but that was more like a Waters-style comedy. Bucky Larson was my first real studio comedy, and I've had a lot of fun doing it. All these great actors were in it. Don Johnson's hilarious in the movie. Christina Ricci kills it. And Kevin Nealon has one of the greatest cameos ever." Will the younger siblings come to watch Bucky Larson? Well, if Dorff's turn in Sofia Coppola's indie drama Somewhere was too much, probably not. "I don't think she'll probably come to this one," he laughed. "She really wanted to see Somewhere because she has a real crush on Elle Fanning. But they're around about the same age. So we told her to get it. We got her into that one, which was a little bit adult for her. But yeah, I think with this one we'll hold off." "Yeah, maybe like about 20 years, Swardson agreed. She can see it when she's 40. Next up, we have the news that Die Hard 5 goes to Russia and seeks a new director. There's been a lot of rumours surrounding the sadly inevitable Die Hard 5 over the past few years, from Bruce Willis claiming it would be a worldwide undershirt adventure to talk that it might inexplicably be called Die Hard 24/7. The most recent bit of news to sneak out of the endless Die Hard 5 rumour mill was that the new film would weirdly be directed by award-winning commercial helmer Noam Murrow of Smart People fame. Franchise fans struggle to imagine what an indie quirk comedy version of Die Hard could possibly be, with guns removed in favour of manic depressive deadpan comedy. Fortunately, we won't have to worry about that any longer, as it's now been reported that Murrow has left the project. However, Willis and the studio are still determined to milk a little more cast out of the Die Hard brand name and plan to search for a new director for the latest franchise entry that will apparently send John McClane to Russia. It hasn't yet been revealed who will replace Murrow in the director's chair. However, there's no way the project will completely disappear. There are simply too many dollar signs involved, even after the disappointing but successful Die Hard 4.0. The current rumour is that Max Payne director John Moore will step in, which suggests the film will promise the same level of mediocrity as the last chapter in the franchise. What the movie will be about is anyone's guess, with endless rumours and speculation popping up over the 4 years since the last outing. Current speculation is that the next film will mostly be spent in Russia, with John McClane and his son getting into trouble with the locals. It's a believable premise, but not a very promising one. Using Russia as a villain could either be an amusing throwback to Reagan-era action flicks, or a lazy sign of desperation. And pairing Bruce Willis up with a young actor didn't work with Justin Long last time, so it's hard to believe they'll come up with a perfect young partner here. Although Ashton Kutcher would at least be an amusingly terrible choice. The simple truth is that we don't really need another Die Hard movie. The original films are action classics from another era, and if Die Hard 4.0 proved anything, it's that the studios just don't know how to make these kinds of movies anymore. Bruce wasn't even allowed to say his full catchphrase in the cinema version. But sadly, that movie made enough money to make a fifth Die Hard movie sound potentially profitable, and all of the cop-outs in the world won't convince those money-hungry execs otherwise. All we can hope for is that Die Hard 5 will be as painless as possible, or ideally it'll languish in development hell for too long and never get made. Fingers crossed, McClane fans. Fingers crossed. In other news, the UK Film Council's winners and losers have been revealed. The movie Quango made some great investments before its closure this year, but other gambles didn't pay off. Royalty is good, raucous schoolgirls are even better, but steer clear of Derbyshire mining towns or revisiting Brideshead. An analysis of productions funded by the UK Film Council has revealed huge variations in what the defunct Quango has seen as a return on its recent investments. According to figures recently released to Parliament by Culture Minister Ed Vasey, the Council made 33 film production awards between April 2006 and March 2011, and they have so far received what they call recoupment income. Recoupments chiefly commence when films are distributed and when they make money abroad. They are wholly reinvested in new productions. Predictably, the King's Speech was a success for the Council, having so far returned 95% of the £1 million lottery money invested. A further 5% was returned by the Council directly to the film's producers for them to invest in future productions. But it was another film featuring Colin Firth, St Trinians, that was the Council's biggest success, returning £1.44 million on the £1.43 million invested. Other successes include Man on Wire, a documentary following French wire walker Philippe Petit's tightrope crossing between the twin towers of New York's World Trade Center, which returned 101% of the $385,000 invested. Nowhere Boy, Sam Taylor Wood's John Lennon biopic, described by Rolling Stone as a smart film, returned 87% of the $1.2 million invested. Brideshead Revisited, a sumptuous reinterpretation of Evelyn Waugh's interwar novel of Catholicism, Love and Nobility, described by the Daily Telegraph as good-looking but empty, returned only 1% of the $1.4 million it was handed. Big names, it appears, do not guarantee a good return. Harry Brown, which featured Michael Caine as a retired Royal Marine who takes revenge when his only friend is beaten to death by a gang, returned only £22,000 of its £1 million. How to Lose Friends and Alienate People, a comedy starring Simon Pegg as a writer for an upmarket US magazine, returned only £10,000 of the £1.47 million lottery money invested. And nor does critical acclaim correspond to financial success. Summer, A Story of Friendship and Tragedy in a Derbyshire Mining Town, for which Robert Carlyle won Best Actor at the 2008 Edinburgh International Film Festival, returned only £11,800 of the £470,000 production budget stumped up by the council. That's a shame, that, because I saw that when it came out on DVD, and it's a really good film. A really, it got a showing on BBC Two recently as well, but it's a really, really good film. I'd really recommend that, but when they showed it again recently, it was stuck at something stupid like 2:30 in the morning. Hey-ho. Next up, on the heels of Robert Rodriguez's launch of Quick Draw Productions at Comic-Con and the slew of projects they're currently having in development, the perennially occupied writer, director, producer, musician has also been promoting his latest directorial effort, Spy Kids, All the Time in the World in 4D, which hits cinemas on August the 19th. The primary idea behind Quickdraw is to develop and finance projects independently before going to studios for distribution. Rodriguez hopes this will prevent the usual hiccups and slowdowns inherent in working with studios over the course of the often slow development process. While all of Rodriguez's future efforts will be under the Quickdraw banner, certain properties such as Spy Kids and Sin City aren't owned by Rodriguez. "I don't own the rights to those, but then neither do the Weinsteins. Disney still has the rights," he said. "That's why from now on I'm just going to own everything, because depending on where you go and to which studio, they might go out of business or whatever. You don't want to tie it up over there. Especially if I make it so economically feasible that I could have paid for it myself, why am I saving these guys money?" Two other projects that are closer to production are Machete 2 and Sin City 2, both of which Rodriguez currently plans to direct. "Our new company is a little strange in that usually you've got somebody with a script and they're trying to get the financing," he explained. "Our company is the other way round. We've got the financing, we're just waiting for the script. So the focus is where it should be. You're not worrying about the money, you're just making sure the script's where it should be. So whichever one has a script ready to go first. Sin City has so many effects, conceivably you could shoot Machete 2 afterwards, and it could still come out before Sin City 2. So how the distribution goes, I'm not sure, but they might just end up shooting around the same time." Since the first Machete movie was co-directed by Ethan Mankiewicz, he was asked whether that might be a franchise he sees handing off to other directors down the line. "Machete I could just produce and have someone come in, yeah. If I found a really cool writer-director to come in and do it, then they could do that too." Okay, so that's your film news for this week. And, well, that's everything to do with films for this week as well. In the second hour, we're going to be having a look at some video games and TV stuff, starting with a review of Call of Duty Black Ops on the Xbox 360. Now, I know that came out, you know, quite a while ago, but there is a reason why I've mentioned it, and why I brought it into this week's show, which you will find out at the start of the next hour. Okay, this is 106.6.
That was Queen, We Will Rock You. And before that, you had LaRue with Going In For The Kill. And you're back on, excuse me, with 106.6, live from North Manchester, with the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson. And in this hour, we're going to be having a look at, we've got video games and TV for you, starting with a review of Call of Duty Black Ops on the Xbox 360. Now, as mentioned, I was going to mention that because it's been out a while. It's been crawling back into the top 10, and it's been... it's been hanging about. So I thought I'd give that a mention, because, well, I wasn't doing this show when it did come out, as I think it must have come out as like a sort of budget release kind of thing. So also the top 10 games charts, some new video games releases, including a budget release of Silent Hunter 5, Battle of the Atlantic, and some video games news. And then they've got some TV stuff. We've got a look at three shows. We've got Geordie finishing School for Girls on BBC Three, The Code on BBC Two, and Beaver Falls on E4. I'll also look ahead to some more programmes coming up, and also some TV news. So I'm going to start with a review of Call of Duty Black Ops on the Xbox 360. Now this starts off rather differently to the average first-person shooter. As it begins, your name is Alex Mason, and you're sitting in an interrogation chair, getting electric shocks and being asked about a man called Dragovich, while random numbers flash up in front of you on a screen. What do they mean? The year is 1968, and you're told you're in the Bay of Pigs invasion in Cuba, 1961. Yes, it's time to experience the Cold War. And so you begin by heading back into the early 60s, where you and your men have to go in and kill Fidel Castro. This is followed by a solo mission in Vorkuta, Russia, set 2 years later, where Gary Oldman returns as Sergeant Reznov from Call of Duty World at War. It's fun to see him return, but his first level did include a frustrating segment where you had to crouch behind a slow coal cart, which he's pushing along, requiring you to poke your head out and cap some baddies, although frequently they managed to get you first. Later on, you'll get to play as him too. Along the way, you get a new handler, Special Agent Hudson, voiced by Ed Harris, and another famous voice in the game comes from Ice Cube as Corporal Bowman. Even former Presidents Nixon and JFK make their presence felt, although obviously they weren't around to record their own voices for this release. As for your own character, his dulcet tones come courtesy of Avatar and Clash of the Titans actor Sam Worthington. Since it keeps jumping back to the present day, quote-unquote, of 1968, with CGI sequences, it did have echoes of Assassin's Creed, which, where you were immediately taken out of the atmosphere, and found that what you were watching was a mere simulation rather than actually being a master thief, and we knew it was effectively a simulation because it's a video game. However, Call of Duty Black Ops doesn't suffer the same fate, because you're not going into some sort of artificial intelligence chamber. You're seeing flashbacks to the time when your character was actually there and doing those actions. Oh, and one other thing is a particular delight in this game, the Dragon's Breath shotgun, which has a flamethrower option. Call of Duty Black Ops has fantastic graphics, explosive, literally, sound effects, and the ambience is brilliantly performed, even in the quietest moments. You die a lot in this game, but it certainly has that one more go factor, and it's hard to tear yourself away. It really is outstanding stuff, and looks glorious in HD, with so much action going on at any one time, and no slowdown. A real triumph, in fact. There's always much to enjoy from the graphics delivered in each successive release, and the gameplay also feels improved upon as well, while the sound was never in doubt. It's very well anointed with checkpoints, which is good too, as I mentioned, the fact that you'll die frequently if you don't pay attention. Grenades will drop at your feet from time to time, particularly if you're in a position where you can hide behind something as the enemy will want to rub you out. Press the right shoulder button to pick them up and toss them back, though. Random irritations about the game include the fact that you have to reload some of your weapons far too quickly, every few seconds it seems, so unless you reduce the difficulty level, you're bound to die as often as the enemy seems to have tons of ammo. At least this time I haven't had the same problem with World at War, where I couldn't enter open enemy huts due to the odd programming. But I have got trapped in the graphics once or twice when trying to get right down on the ground to avoid gunfire. Note that it won't take you too long to complete the game. A couple of solid evenings will get you through this. But even still, it does feel like it goes on a bit and is incredibly repetitive. And just when you think it's done, there's still more to do as you go in search of Dragovich. Overall, the graphics and sound are faultless. The playability has improved slightly as it feels a lot more fluid, so that's a 9 out of 10. And for enjoyment, I'd give it an 8 out of 10. That's because it's as entertaining as it can be, and with some decent artificial intelligence from the baddies, it feels a little disjointed as being constantly broken up with too many CGI or mini-CGI sequences, so you never feel in 100% control of what you're doing. I'm not one for Xbox Live Online play, but if you are, then there's a Creator Class 2.0 customization tool, which lets you personalise weapons with clan tag writing, emblems, attachments, and camouflage painting. Choose between a red dot sight or a reflex sight for your weapon, both of which share the same traits, only look visually different. And many more options besides. And one thing I did quite enjoy with World of War, however, was blowing away zombies offline with my nephew. In this release, there are a few options relating to them again, one of which includes co-op and online games, where you can defend the Pentagon from zombies while taking on the roles of JFK, Richard Nixon, Secretary of State for Defense Robert McNamara, and Fidel Castro. Overall, this game gets a solid 9 out of 10. So that's definitely worth getting. If you haven't got it already, as I say, I think it's reduced in price now because it's climbed back into the top 10 recently. A definite worth getting. Okay, in a minute we'll be having some more charts for you. First of all, we're having Billy Idol with White Wedding. This is 106.6.
106.6.
That's Billy Idol with White Wedding, and you're back on 106.6, live from North Manchester, and it's the DVD Fever Show with Don Robinson. And in this section with the video games, we're now having a look at the charts. We've got, in the top 10, we've got number 1 again, Zumba Fitness. Number 2, Cars 2. Number 3, Call of Juarez, The Cartel. Number 4, Just Dance 2, Extra Songs. Number 5, Lego Pirates of the Caribbean. Number 6, Dirt 3. Number 7, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. Number 8, FIFA 11. Number 9, climbing back in, is L.A. Noire. And just still hanging in on the top 10, the aforementioned Call of Duty Black Ops. Now, one new entry in the top, well, in the top 40 really this week, we've got The Sims 3 Town Life Stuff. And in this one, with exciting content never seen before in a stuff pack, The Sims 3 Town Life Stuff introduces new venues to give your Sims' entire town a makeover, complete with objects just as perfect for their homes. Build a chic new library, create an exclusive high-tech gym, design a fun playground, or make chores a pleasure with a fresh new laundry room. The Sims 3 Town Life Stuff not only gives you loads of new inspired design to use at home, but includes new community places like a scrumptious Nibbles cafe for your Sims to visit too. Re-entries in the top 40, there's number 31, Crysis 2, which is brilliant. And number 32, The Sims 3 Generations. Number 38, Homefront. Number 39, Little Big Planet 2. And number 40, Portal 2. Now, there's also Earth Defence Force Insect Armageddon. That's a title that must have been so bad, because last week it went straight in at number 15, and this week it's dropped out of the top 40. Now we're going to have a look at some video game releases coming out this Friday. Again, there's not much out this week. In fact, barely anything of note, but then, well, it is summer. We've got to have a look at Silent Hunter 5, Battle of the Atlantic. This is a budget release. And this one takes players behind the periscope of a German Type 7 U-boat to take on the Allied forces in battles across the Atlantic Ocean and Mediterranean Sea. Players command the U-boat as a submarine captain from a first-person view in a campaign that spans from 1939 to 1943. So you have the ability to walk through all of the submarine in first-person view. These are the key features. There's direct crew interaction and a simulation of the tension and the fear of the crew. It features a new objective-driven dynamic campaign mode. Allied ships will respond to players' advances in new locations. Upgrades and resupply will alter the campaign dramatically. There's improved graphics and realism. And also the crew's artificial intelligence will recommend things to you, such as search patterns and targets. Also out this week, we've got Mystic Diary 1 and 2, which is the Hidden Mystery Collectives. The first one, Mystic Diary Lost Brother, says open the Book of Adventure. Take on the role of a Victorian-era magician on a quest to find his lost brother. Solve puzzles, find hidden clues, and use the powerful Mystic Diary to travel the world and unlock the mystery behind your brother's sudden disappearance. And in the second one, called Haunted Island, it says travel deep into the heart of Haunted Island to unlock the secrets of an abandoned house in the Blackwoods. Solve cryptic puzzles and free the trapped souls. And also one called Paramedic Simulator, which says you're responsible for emergencies and ambulance transport across the city. And in a city full of people, a lot can go wrong. On a good day, that might be nothing more than a few cuts and bruises or a sports injury. But on a bad day, you might have to cope with a major motorway pile-up, an industrial accident, or a gas leak from a local factory. Whatever the situation, the paramedics have got to be there, and it's up to you to help the injured and get the seriously wounded to hospital. Get ready for a huge variety of challenges and scenarios, varying difficulty levels and unpredictable weather conditions, and technical factors which will make your job even harder. There are numerous mini-games, with quizzes, hidden objects, and reaction tests. These will add to the gameplay and make Paramedic Simulator a challenge for the whole family. Well, having seen Sirens on Channel 4, which is now finished as of last night, it does make it sort of romanticises going around in an ambulance, but it does make it look like a bit of a laugh, really. But that's the video games out for this week. I say it wasn't really a great deal, but that's it. It's summer, and they save all the best games for sort of August, September, October time. So we'll get some better stuff then. Before we have the video games for you, I'm going to have another song. I'm going to have Bad Manners and Lip Up Fatty. This is 106.6.
106.6.
It's Bad Manners and Lip Up Fatty, and you're listening to 106.6 live from North Manchester. And you're back with the DVD Fever Show with Dom Robinson. And in this section, we're going to be having a look at some video games news for you. First bit of news is that the BBC Worldwide are to publish independent games. Executive producer Simon Harris said that the firm will work with British developers in a bid to promote their work in other regions. "We really want to start motivating British development talent," Harris told attendees at the Develop conference in Brighton. "In a few weeks' time, you'll see our first initiative around UK indies. We've come up with a plan, and we're working with a couple of indies already, looking to get them into business outside of the UK. Harris added that the BBC Worldwide is to release games on a number of platforms in the near future. "We have Facebook titles under development. We're working on consoles, Flash, and Xbox Live Arcade and PlayStation Network," he said. "Over the next year, you'll hopefully be seeing a lot of innovation from us." BBC Worldwide has recently released a number of TV shows on iPhone and iPad apps, including Doctor Who and Top Gear. Also, Freddy Krueger is coming to Mortal Kombat. He'll be a downloadable fighter in the latest release of Mortal Kombat, it has been revealed. The Nightmare on Elm Street murderer will be based on the character in the 2010 remake rather than the Robert Englund original. As well as his trademark claws, Freddy will have his own methods of dispatching other characters at the end of each fight. Freddy will be the fourth and final downloadable character for Mortal Kombat, following Scarlet, Kenshi and Rain. He will be available from August the 9th on October... on Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3. Also, Microsoft is being sued by Impulse Technology over its Kinect sensor. Impulse Technology's lawsuit claims that the Kinect sensor infringes on seven of the company's patents describing a system and method for tracking and assessing movement skills in multidimensional space. Prior to Kinect's launch, Impulse Technology contacted Microsoft regarding a wide variety of games where the movement of the player is tracked in 3D and a certain exercise games where the motion of the player is tracked to affect movement of a virtual avatar and the extension of the user is monitored, including where the tracking of the player is done by use of a camera. The lawsuit also includes eight publishers such as Electronic Arts, Sega and Konami as defendants, citing their games for violating the patents as well. Impulse is seeking a permanent injunction, damages, treble damages, interest, attorney fees, and costs. Microsoft has prominently featured Kinect games as a central part of its game lineup, including Kinect Star Wars and Kinect support in Halo Combat Evolved Anniversary. Microsoft also recently announced a Kinect Star Wars Xbox 360 system bundle that included a Kinect sensor and an R2-D2 themed console. Also, on the Microsoft theme, the Xbox Live games cost more, says a Microsoft executive. Xbox Live Arcade portfolio director Chris Chowler admitted that the average price for an Xbox Live Arcade game has increased in line with the rising quality. "If you look at Live Arcade and do the maths and look at the publicly available sales numbers, you can see that the average prices on Xbox Live Arcade have crept up over the last few years, which has been an interesting trend because on some app markets there's been a race to zero as fast as possible. We've seen a little bit of the opposite happening. I don't really know where prices are going to go, ultimately that's set by the market, but it's been really gratifying to see that people are willing to pay a premium price for digital content." Charler added, "I think that the games we're shipping, a Limbo or Little or Castle Crashers, are as good as anything on the market. So far this year, 20 Xbox Live Arcade games have been confirmed at 1,200 Microsoft points, which is about £10, a figure that's likely to rise with 5 months' worth of releases still to come. In 2009, 21 out of the 86 games released were also priced at 1,200 points, while last year, 27 out of the 85 titles cost 1,200 points. Okay, so that's your video games news for this week. And in a minute we're going to have a look at some of the TV programmes that I've been watching in the past week, starting with Geordie Finishing School for Girls. Yes, it's... I've sort of given you an indication that it's not very good. Well, you'll soon find out. But first of all, we'll have a bit of music, and we've got The Adventures of Stevie V with Dirty Cash. This is 106.6.
106.6.
That was The Adventures of Stevie V with Dirty Cash. It's a song I particularly remember from university. Are you back on 106.6 live from North Manchester? And you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson. Now, in this last half hour of the show, we're going to be having a look at some TV programmes watched in the past week, starting with The Geordie Finishing School for Girls. This is on BBC Three every Tuesday at 9 o'clock. Four privileged young ladies swap their affluent lives down south for 10 days of living on the breadline in the north. Steph, Fee, Lucy and Fiona are posh and pampered with virtually no experience of life at the other end of the social spectrum. Nor have any of them ever ventured north before, or grappled with a Geordie accent. The girls move into an ex-council house in one of the most disadvantaged wards in the city. Here, unemployment is also is almost three times the national average, with more than half its children classed as living in poverty. The girls immerse them in what's to them an alien and unfamiliar world, and hand over the credit cards to live on the equivalent of job seekers' allowance. Their guides are four local women, Shauna, Lindsay, Michaela and Kimberly, who educate the southerners in the harsh realities of living with little money. But the experience turns out to be a whole lot harder than they'd ever imagined. As the girls got Fee, whose daddy is a banker, and she says she's scared that she's going into a blank space. Well, I suppose she means that's her brain. And meanwhile Fiona, another Fee, but called Fiona, she's engaged to a banker. They're all to blame. Lucy and Fiona go to the corner shop to get some Spam and quote-unquote bacon grill, but they can't understand what they are. And they're just also disgusted that there's no Wi-Fi available in the house in which they're staying. Oh, what a shame. The girls are also given daggy clothes picked for them by the Geordie lasses. They're given a finishing school task, which is make your job seeker's allowance stretch for the full fortnight, but they send them off for some to buy some peas pudding and plate pie, both of which they get, but also some penny long stand, which doesn't actually exist. This programme is full of stereotypes, putting all Geordies on benefits, with families all living with three generations under the same roof, while the posh girls don't know how to cook peas pudding, despite it listing all the instructions on the tub. Would you believe this is the first part of a whole series? How much more stereotyping is there to get across? Oh, and they also made it sound like Geordie girls are more likely to suffer from drug problems as well. Oh, a shock BBC Three revelation later on at the pub. They said that all the local lads are eager to talk to the girls with their breasts pointing out. Well, that's such as the way they were dressed. Yeah, definitely not recommended that one. We also had The Code, which is that's out on BBC Two every Wednesday at 9 o'clock. And in this one, Marcus de Sotoy reveals a hidden numerical code that underpins all nature. A code that has the power to explain everything, from the numbers and shapes we see all around us, to the rules that govern our own lives. In this first episode, Marcus reveals how significant numbers appear throughout the natural world. They're part of a hidden mathematical world that contains the rules that govern everything on our planet and beyond. This documentary in three parts. It started off with the man standing in a field with lots of arty shots trying to build up a drama where there is none. As a bunch of religious types had numbers built into a cathedral. Numbers that hold the key to creation. Or something like that. What a load of old nonsense. He then gave an example of strength in numbers with some cicada insects who travel in large numbers of them so their enemies can't pick them all off in one go. And also that these particular type of cicadas have a 13-year life cycle, and so it stops them breeding at the same time as other types of cicadas. And so there's no cross-species breeding. So after we saw how many numbers govern the lives of cicadas, and a brief description of prime numbers, as 13 is a prime number, it was on to comparing the same thing to sound. Now, 20 minutes in, I was getting bored with this. It's just a case of style over substance. In fact, after 30 minutes, he then began to define pi for us. That's something I learned at school. It also featured pointless, shaky camera work during the interview segments, and just dragged towards its pointless conclusion. which wasn't a conclusion. It was just the end of the programme. I won't be watching this again, and I don't recommend it to you either. But if you're desperate to watch it, it's on. The next one's on there. There's three in total. So basically tomorrow night and Wednesday next week at 9 o'clock, you can watch the other two parts if you must. We'll have a look at Beaver Falls in a moment, but a little bit more music. We'll have Marianne Faithful, Why Do We Have to Part? This is 106.6.
106.6.
That was Marianne Faithful, sounding particularly cheery with Why Do We Have to Part? And you're back on 106.6 live from North Manchester, and it's the DVD Fever Show with Don Robinson, that's me. There's one other programme to look at that's been on in the past week. It was Beaver Falls. This is on Wednesday's E4 at 9 o'clock. This one, Flynn, Arab and Barry are three British chancers, fresh out of uni and determined to have one last summer of irresponsibility before they face the real world. For reasons best known to Flynn, they bag themselves jobs at Beaver Falls, an elite American summer camp for the ridiculously beautiful teenage offspring of California's rich and powerful. In episode 1, the guys arrive at camp. Arab is packing a broken heart, Barry a stash of weed, and Flynn an insatiable desire to get laid as much as possible. Things seem to get off to a good start when Barry meets the gorgeous lifeguard Kimberly, and Arab clicks with a wholesome guidance counsellor Rachel. But threats to their summer of fun start to mount when they fall out with the jocks and the kids, and Flynn's raging libido lands them all in some very hot water. Eventually, an uneasy truce is formed, but a message from home reveals Flynn is hiding a secret. Now, watching this programme, we quickly saw that Barry has no luck with the girls. Well, Flynn just seems to pull them all, starting with one of the MILFs in charge. Barry, as I say, was also lusting after the American hottie Kimberly, even though she has a beefcake boyfriend, so he plans to woo her with all the weed he's brought with him. Unfortunately for them, after the opening night shenanigans, they don't get to look after the beautiful people who have all arrived in camp, but instead all the overprivileged idiots with their rich parents. These kids revolt after the three guys completely fail to organise proper rookie day activities, which is meant to include things like riding in tanks and boats, but all they've managed is a game of cricket. However, what starts off with promise ends up quite slow as it progresses and starts to drag. Maybe a second episode would be worth a shot, as Sirens was a bit slow to get going, but that really improved. So I think I will give that a second try. I say that's on 9 o'clock tomorrow night on E4. Or if you're desperate to watch The Code, then you can switch over to E4 plus 1 at 10. Now, look ahead to a couple of things I'll be reviewing next week, which you'll see have started already, but I'll be having a look at Dragon's Den, which is a series presented by Evan Davis in which the budding entrepreneurs get 3 minutes to pitch their business ideas to five multimillionaires willing to invest their own cash and kickstart the business. 34-year-old Georgette Hewitt from Kent tempts the Dragons to invest in her answer to a common birthday party headache familiar to all parents. Entrepreneurs often take advantage of the latest government schemes and incentives when building their business, which is exactly what Chris Hopkins from Yorkshire has done by capitalising on the solar-powered feed-in tariff. But when a dragon knows your industry inside out, it's not always what you want. Add into the mix the most unusual use you could ever think of for a plastic egg, a circus act that's sure to go with a bang, and a mind-coaching massage service, and you've got a formidable showcase of the great British spirit of invention and innovation. Now, as I say, I know the first episode's already aired, but I've reviewed enough things for this week, so I'll be having a look at the first two episodes together next week. Also, that started up again, Hell's Kitchen USA is back. This is a new series of Gordon Ramsay's US cooking competition, in which 18 contestants battle it out for the prize of a head chef position at BLT Steak in New York City. The competition kicks off with a signature dish challenge, with the most successful team getting to enjoy a lunch at the LA Market restaurant at the JW Marriott Hotel at LA Live, where they'll eat with last season's winner. Before the evening service begins, however, there's a shock when one contestant has to be rushed to hospital. The remaining chefs must continue in the kitchen where things do not go according to plan. And some customers even leave before the food arrives. As I say, first episode of that's aired already last night. So next week I'll have a look at the first two episodes together. So yeah, you'll have both Dragon's Den and Hell's Kitchen USA together. Okay, in a little bit we'll be having some film news for you. But first of all, we'll be having another bit of music for you, which is LL Cool J telling you to control yourself. This is 106.6.
106.6.
That was LL Cool J with Control Yourself, and you're back with the final part of the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson, on 106.6, live from North Manchester. And in this last little section, we'll have some TV news for you, starting with the news that Frankie Boyle is working on a new series with Channel 4, and is working to develop a new topical comedy series. Following months of rumour, the corporation has now confirmed to Trade Magazine Broadcast, that it is talking to the Scottish comedian with a view to creating a brand new series for him. The comic was last seen on Channel 4 in December 2010, when his sketch show, Frankie Boyle's Tramadol Nights, attracted much controversy and many column inches from fans and critics alike, particularly in relation to a joke which referred to the disabled son of glamour model turned TV personality, Katie Price, aka Jordan. A spokeswoman for Channel 4 said, "Tramadol Nights was a creative one-off series for Frankie Boyle, but Channel 4 and Frankie are working together on a new comedy vehicle with a topical focus. Hopefully a new pilot will record later in the year, but it's still very much a work in progress. The new show is in early development stages, and the details are scarce, but it is expected to be recorded in front of a studio audience. It is believed it will not be produced by the comedy unit, the Glasgow production company behind Tramadol Nights." Also, a Royal Family Christmas special has been confirmed by Craig Cash. And Cash, who writes and stars in the BBC One comedy with Caroline Ahern, has confirmed that it will be back for another festive one-off. He says, "We're going to do another episode at Christmas. We think that the characters still have lots of mileage. They are very popular, and my wife wants a new kitchen," he said. When asked whether they ever consider writing another full series, he added, "Well, it takes it out of you doing 6 weeks, and then there's the time it takes to write and edit. I think the public like it as a one-off at Christmas, and it seems to work. But who knows? We may do a series again one time." Recent Royal Family specials, The New Sofa, The Golden Egg Cup, and Joe's Crackers have all been rating hits. And Cash and his fellow Royal Family star, Ralph Whittle, have recently been reunited for new Sky One comedy series, The Cafe, which will air in the autumn. Also, ITV to pilot a pay trial online. They'll be charging online viewers for bespoke content and archive material from the new year. The proposed charges could come into play for downloading things from the channel's back catalogue of drama and for special webisodes of shows like Coronation Street. However, viewers will not pay to catch up on weekly shows on the ITV player. Chief Executive Adam Crozier says that the network is to diversify its revenue streams. ITV are understood to be trying to establish what viewers would be willing to pay for. Any trial would or could involve one-off payment or a subscription fee, and the trial will start privately before being rolled out to the public. I mean, for my view, I find barely enough worth watching on ITV, never mind having to pay for anything extra. So, I won't be giving them my credit card details, that's for sure. Also, Charlie Sheen is reportedly on the verge of a £6 million deal to join the cast of Celebrity Big Brother. The former Two and a Half Men star is flying into the UK in the next 2 weeks ahead of the show's debut on Channel 5 later this month, according to the Daily Star. Well, of course, the Daily Star fund Channel 5, who therefore fund Big Brother. "It would be unbelievable, a producer's dream," a production source told the paper. "No one would want to miss the chance of seeing what Sheen is up to and hear the wacky things he's saying. Let's face it, he's been saying some crazy stuff recently." Sheen is one of several stars who have been linked with Celebrity Big Brother, which is believed to be beginning in mid to late August. Jedward, Kerry Katona, Len Bitopek, Snoop Dogg, BBC Radio 1's Tim Westwood, and former Visage frontman Steve Strange and Sarah the Duchess of York have also been rumoured as contestants. A Channel 5 spokesman said, "Big Brother execs are in talks with a number of celebrities about appearing on the series, but we're not confirming any names at the moment." Okay, well, that's all the news for this week. So we've had 2 hours of films, video games and news. And thanks very much to everyone who's listened. So yeah, basically, that's if you want to see anything that you've see trailers for, or gaming footage for anything that you've heard about in the show, including there's like even a trailer for that Freddy Krueger's character who's going to be in the Mortal Kombat games. Go and have a look on the Facebook page. That's facebook.com/DVDFeverShow, and you'll be able to see everything there and all the trailers for all the films as well. So thanks very much to everyone who's listened, and we'll be back again next week. In the meantime, we'll play out with a bit of Blondie and It's Atomic. This is 106.6.
106.6.